Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Good morning, everybody, and happy Friday. Happy summer. Yeah, we were off yesterday. I'll be honest, Jeffrey. I didn't expect it. I don't believe that we have ever been off before on Juneteenth.
But we were last year.
Were we really?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yeah.
This is our second year in a row.
At least.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, well, there you go. So we're back. And for a special one day appearance before we disappear again for what we like to call the weekend. And so anyway, it is
Friday that feels like a Saturday.
I don't know what it feels like anymore. Yeah. Like, what does this feel like? What? Because I was already off Monday, sort of.
You're
chiming
in
from Colorado. Yeah, I have no idea what day it is today, but I do know it is summer. It is officially the first day of summer, and it feels like the heat is coming along with that, does it not, Jeffrey?
Yeah, no, I told you I would know when summer's here.
And it's here. So yep. There you go. Today on a radio show, let's see, it's a little bit different because Jason and John are off. They're really taking Juneteenth seriously, and so they are off. And so I told Jason, Jason, you enjoy your, 4 days for them, right? That's
sure.
Pretty good. And so I told Jason, go ahead, be with the family. And I'm looking right now at Stephen A.
Mm-hmm.
Just wondering if he happened to be talking about, the shooting in Bartlett at the Walmart. Do you think he's talking about the shooting?
I think it's going to be in the B block.
Stephen A., no one wants to go to the Bartlett Walmart.
Correct. He's got to get through. He's got to at least pretend like he watched last night.
The game.
And then he'll get right back.
And then we'll
right
back to the shooting at the Walmart. And no one goes there anymore, Jeffrey. No one. That's a place. Did you hear about the shooting in the Walmart, by the way? The reason I know about it is because Chris Thomas, he's been a local politician, and he's a big Tiger fan and is a man about town. And he gave us a play-by-play of the shooting. Evidently, there was a dispute between employees at the Walmart, okay? And one of them shot another.
Okay.
Which we do not approve of.
Feels aggressive.
It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. But anyway, Chris Thomas was on the scene. So here's what happened. Before Stephen A. steals my thunder, let me tell you what happened. Okay, ready? Not something I'd usually share. This is from his Facebook post. But I was right in the middle of this active shooter situation, about 40 feet away from where it happened. It happened in the... What area of the story do you think it happened in, Jeffrey? Which section? It was in one of the sections.
Outdoors?
No, TV. That's a good guess.
Okay.
Good guess. We didn't have Right in the Right trivia yesterday, so I'm just trying to keep you sharp.
So it I heard happened, you say television. So.
It happened in the TV electronics area. Yeah. Chris Thomas. I was in the pet section next to it. I heard the first two
pets
shots.
Pets and chemicals continue.
This would be, by the way, terrifying. Right? Like, I heard the first two shots.
I would think if you hear gunshots in a Walmart, don't you think, like,
there's a shooter, and they could be shooting all of us, right?
Exactly.
So anyway, I heard the first two shots, but it sounded like metal shelves falling down. Then there was another 8 to 10 shots that went off fast. I had an elderly. At that point, I'm pooping. Like I am out of there. I don't know where I'm going exactly.
I'm leaving
the pet section.
I'm not going to a bath. I'm not getting stationary. I'll tell you.
No. I'm not. I didn't say I was heading to the. I'm just saying I was.
You'd be crapping your pants. That's what you're saying.
My pants. Unauthorized evacuation.
I would be using my institutional knowledge of the Walmart floor plan.
Oh, you know the Walmart.
Oh yeah, and I'd be going through.
Where would you go? You just run away from the gunshots, though.
I'd run to the back room and then go out the backside.
I had an elderly couple next to me and a mom daughter that ran up while others were fleeing. This would be terrifying. You're all of a sudden you are in that there is a gunman. And we're fleeing situation. I felt it was too late to run, not knowing how many shooters. That's the other problem, right? so I prepared to shelter in place and fight if needed. Elderly couple didn't realize what was going on, so I tried to guide them, mom, daughter. It was time for them to flee. I decided to stay back and make sure they all could get out. This is good at Chris, right?
Mm-hmm.
More heroic than I would have been.
Mm-hmm.
I would have been like, move over, mother and daughter, I'm out of here. I had, listen to this, though. I had items and a basket ready to throw at any attacker. I wanted the people to get out, and I was aware of my training. Once the elderly couple started moving towards the exit, I knew I could once they got to a safe distance. I decided to run along the main aisle with my cart and was ready to throw anything once everyone was at a safe distance. And then he later saw the victim. He was very impressed, by the way, that the the fire department did, the folks helping the victim, who had been shot at least 7 to 8 times, he said. Oh, my God. He goes on to say, not a reflection on Bartlett, reflection on culture. A culture where just, Stephen A. would say that's a reflection on Bartlett.
Yeah, probably.
You know, like, that no one goes to wants to
leadership.
Go. Leadership. Hey, Bartlett, leadership of the city. Yeah. There's some things that got to be looked at over there. A culture where disagreements turn to deadly violence, which is unnecessary. This wasn't a robbery. This was two employees with a disagreement, etc. Well, what would you want to throw at a attacker? Like, if you're in a Walmart, I'm not giving you access. And by the way, I hope this one guy survives.
Brad's texting me. We have a couple of details.
Uh-huh.
So,
shout out to Chris Thomas for being willing to, like...
Chris is sharing a story from a guy named Mike Wiseman.
Oh, is that true?
That's according to Brad.
No, I don't think that's true. Maybe it is true. Is it true? Mike Wiseman's the mayor. Is that right?
So maybe Mike told a story?
Let me look at it. I know that maybe that's true. So this would have been Mike who was the hero here. Anyway. I'm not giving you an access to the gun section.
Yeah, no, I was like, that was what I was thinking. I was like, would any of that really matter? Like, gun beats basically anything in my basket.
I think gun beats anything. I mean, what would you want? You went on baseball. What would you want, though? You've got it from my friend. Yeah, I know you're right. From my friend. He's exactly right. He was from my friend, Mayor Wiseman. So it was Mayor Wiseman. No. Yeah, I think that's right. I think that's right. It was Wiseman. He's exactly right.
Okay.
I thought Wiseman was sharing, because they also shared the Bartlett police official report. I thought Wiseman was sharing that, and then Chris was describing his first person.
Yeah.
This seems like the mayor was on the scene. I got to commend the leadership.
Yeah.
The leadership is there ready to throw.
Stephen A. still found a way to spin it.
Ready to throw like a frozen.
So I was trying to think. Baseball,
something frozen?
Baseball's not a bad one.
You can get a baseball at a Walmart.
I feel pretty
How about a football? You just catch it.
This
isn't the tight end from the Ravens we're talking about.
Like, you want to throw something that distracts them, too. Like, so maybe you go and, like, you get the bucket of baseballs and just start, like, throwing, like, BP.
Sort of like a Home Alone situation where you're laying down stuff.
Correct. You want to get them, like, distracted and moving in, like,
Let's be honest. I, with all due respect, I do admire that the mayor was willing to do this, but you got no shot. There's nothing you can throw. You can throw at the guy, including a knife.
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm not. I was just thinking of like what. There's nothing in my basket that I would feel like I feel good about this.
How about
going
the basket?
Up against a gun.
He was willing to throw the basket too.
The basket's not a bad one because then they're gonna have to at least like
duck.
Yeah.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
I mean, the truth of the matter is that, of course, this is exactly right. It is not a reflection on Bartlett. It is a reflection, or on Walmart. It is a reflection of where we are.
Yeah.
It is a reflection on where we are. And I'm glad there wasn't any others who were caught up in this. And I hope that the guy who was shot, of course, survives. It's summer. That's where we started.
Yeah.
It's summer. I decided to give Jason Smith the day off. And so, but because I don't just like to hear myself talk, I decided, well, we're going to have Chris Harrington straight up at 10 o'clock. And then our analytics analyst, Peter Calkins, is going to join us. It did strike me a little bit, you know, when I when I asked Peter. He also got a scouting report on the Duke guys, you know?
Yep.
Need a scouting report on the Duke guys. I hear this Cooper Flagg pretty good. Pretty good. And so we'll get a scouting report on him. But also, there are other Duke guys.
Knipple.
Yeah. And Malwak.
Sure.
The big. And Proctor.
Do you feel like you're, because you obviously love a draft. Do you feel like you've caught up with the draft? Because
I now know the names.
I don't.
Here's the truth. I know the names. I know the idea of what I like.
Yeah.
In most drafts, I actually have opinions, whether it's an NHL draft, an NFL draft, or an NBA draft, I have opinions about who I actually like. Now I only know who I like the idea of.
Okay, because I feel like I'm so far, like this is like, I didn't do any of the work, and now it's like the middle of October, and I'm just
I'm done. This is a pop quiz that we were not at all ready for. I did, by the way, listen to Drew and Chris's podcast.
I like what Chris said about the podcast in the early word. We're not draft experts, but in this podcast, we play one.
I can see that. It's funny. Like, here's a guy who I don't like the idea of.
All right.
Neek Clifford.
Yep. Colorado State guy.
And it's not because of David Roddy.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. But it's also not because of David
Roddy. It's not because of David Roddy.
Because like, that's why I made the joke during basketball season. If you go and you look, there, like every single year on Colorado State, there's somebody that looks like David Roddy's body.
The reason that it's just that he could turn out to be awesome. Like he could literally turn out to be, he's not going to be Desmond Bane because he's not the shooter that Desmond Bane is, but he's a deeply experienced college player. He's older. He's a, you know, he's... mature. He carried that Colorado State team. Obviously had a big second half against Memphis, didn't he? But
yeah.
it was the shooter who was knocking down the
one
guy who had the game of his life. But anyway, the reason I don't like him, it feels totally forced by positional need. And I think in the NBA, even more than anywhere else, once you get to pick 16,
yeah,
your chances of really hitting are pretty damn slim. If you further say, well, I don't need a small guard or I don't need a big, and what I really need is a wing.
Yeah.
And he's the best wing available. I think there's a very good chance that he becomes a non-factor as an NBA player. He has no signature skill. And there is a guy who becomes a impactful NBA player just at a position that you don't really need. But I don't think this team, the truth of the matter is they need every position.
It's kind of like in the NFL draft taking like the fourth quarterback.
Like it's a little bit like that.
You could
it's
hit
a little bit like, well, the fifth quarterback.
But it feels like it's also the only reason that guy's getting drafted where he is because he plays quarterback. It's the same thing. It's like the only reason why you're getting drafted at 16 is because you're a wing. But it's not really like the type of player you are.
Right. I mean, there are things he does. He rebounds really well for a two, you know, whatever he is. He rebounds really well. But anyway, so that's I don't really have a great conviction. But anyway, Peter's going to join us, tell us what he thinks about the Grizzlies. And I did wonder, you know, is this like me? Am I LeBron here bringing on Bronny, you know?
No, because this is earned, not given.
Earned, not given.
Yeah.
We had him on the first time, and he was crushed it.
Correct.
So we brought him back.
Yes.
Right. I think that's right. I think that's right. So anyway, Peter's going to join us in the next segment. Then we got a Harrington after that. And then we got a whole bunch of things to talk about, of course. I'll be honest. Like, I was stunned by what happened last night on the court. And we will get to that. I will even say it. Now, I'll say it on a Friday. I wish it was a news dump. I wish we were the afternoon show today, because this could be a news dump. But it's on a Friday after a Thursday when we were off, before a hot weekend of summer.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of hoping the listenership is a little lighter than usual when I say this, because you're not going to hear this very often. But I was wrong. And so I was 100% wrong about the Thunder and their indestructibility, and I was wrong about whether the Pacers could give them a series. I'm thrilled to be wrong, because who the hell doesn't like a game seven? We got a game seven, first time since 2016, and literally every game they've been the favorite. Literally every game they've been the favorite. It is kind of amazing. And so I did not expect at all what we witnessed last night, as it was not even a game. 64-42 at the half, 90-60 after a three. We'll get to that in a moment. I thought I'd start, though, with the Stephen A. stuff. When we last left this, we'd had Stephen A. say what he said, and then we had Ja and the mayor and the head of the chamber say what they said. And then, and we didn't give much time to this. We literally had Stephen A. doubling down by reading Memphis crime rates on ESPN, which is just insanity. that literally that's where they went. But listen, he loves conflict, man. He loves conflict. That is the feeder for social media and for clicks is conflict. And so he did what he did. And then yesterday he accepted the mayor's invitation to come to Memphis. Good afternoon, Mr. Young. Deeply appreciate your words and the sentiments that came with them. Progress is what life is all about. And when it comes to Memphis, where some dear friends of mine reside, I wish for nothing less. The people deserve nothing less. So with that said, I accept your invitation to come to your city as your guest. Let's make it happen. I'm looking forward to it. The mayor wrote back, sounds like a plan, my brother. So
what's the opposite of rolling out the red carpet?
What is the opposite of rolling? It's pouring the hot oil and tax down,
yeah.
Right? Isn't it? Isn't that that would be the metaphor? So listen, I find it all ridiculous and attention seeking. And so now you're going to have Stephen A. coming to town, and you have people fawning over Stephen A. And you're going to have Stephen A. saying, I said what I said, but I've seen some, unless he happens to wander into the Bartlett Walmart, when all hell is breaking loose. I said what I said, but it's great to see this team, the city making progress and blah, blah, blah. And it will be a dog and pony show. And with the whole notion of perpetuating this and attention seeking and I'm not much interested in the charade, in the showing him around, in giving, where do you take him, by the way? Where do you want to take Stephen A? But I almost, it's the whole thing's insulting. You know what I mean? They're definitely going to be funny. Yes.
But like, there's also this weird reality, like what we were talking about the other day of like, we kind of need the PR.
Well, no, I was going to get to that. I'm going to get to that. So I don't love any of it.
Do we make him the duck master?
Make him the duck master. Okay, let's pretend here for a moment that we really are trying to do everything we can to win over Stephen A. Smith.
Stephen Smith sounds like such
Stephen
a different,
Smith. Stephen a.
different
Smith.
Person.
Need the A. Definitely need the A. You're taking him. I mean, you're taking him to the rendezvous, right?
Well, for sure. I mean, presidents have
eaten.
Listen, he wants to be president. Presidents have eaten there.
I mean, there's no question that 100% they will go, and they should go to the Civil Rights Museum.
Yeah.
That is, they will 100% go to the Civil Rights Museum.
I guess the other problem that I have in my plan is, he's been here before.
Oh, 100%. So like, I don't. He came and spoke at Cordova High School.
Yeah, like I don't know.
Yeah, that's right. The substance of this doesn't matter. It's just for the dog and pony show.
Right.
So that's why he's doing it. So, and then Memphis will do their part of the dog and pony show. I don't think you can give him a key to the city.
You know that,
No. Cannot give him a key to
much.
The city.
That's a bridge
that would
too
be
far.
Worse than a poster giveaway for Shane Battier's return to FedEx Farm, which I did not. I'm one who didn't disapprove
of. That's up there with the welcome back John Calipari dinner.
Yeah. Do you take him to Cozy Corner, though, instead?
I mean, Cozy
the problem is you can't take him to every... You could take him to
right,
the... Like, you could take him to the barbecue shop. You could take him to Cozy Corner. You can take him to the
Payne's,
to the rendezvous. You can take him to Payne's. You can... Like, there's a whole bunch of them, and I'm missing a bunch. So, my apologies. Central, Commissary, like what, you know them all. So we could take him to the barbecue. Take him to Gus's. Take him to Gibson's Donuts. You walk across the bridge. I love the bridge. You walk across the bridge and you see the great Mississippi and the trains and the view of downtown. Do you take him up to the top of the pyramid?
I mean,
you let him see the alligators?
We literally put a Bass Pro Superstore in a pyramid.
Is that a source of pride or is that a source of embarrassment?
It's phenomenal.
Oh, it's phenomenal. Okay, it's phenomenal.
Yeah, I mean. You ever walk, like, even...
You take them...
I could not be less of an outdoors person, and you walk in there like, this is insane.
There's alligators in this store.
Yeah.
In this pyramid. There's a giant-ass pyramid, and there's alligators in
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
So you take them there. You take them to St. Jude, don't you?
Yes, you have to. Like,
hey, here's the truth.
You're doing the whole PR campaign. Like,
here's the truth. If you take him to the Civil Rights Museum and to St. Jude... Only a total scumbag would not be moved by that. And in two different ways. Because one illustrates the struggle.
Sure.
And where we've been. And
I mean, they both represent the struggle.
And then the other, yeah, the other represents the heart. I mean, and the miracles. And only a complete jackass could go to those places and not be incredibly moved. And so I think that's where you start right there. Those two places. In terms of what you were saying before, yes, this is ridiculous. It's ridiculous. We have to be fawning over Stephen A. Smith, right? In order to win his approval, to feel blah, blah, blah. The whole thing is a complete charade, but the back and forth or whatever, like, having said that, and this is why, you know, someone said something bad about us, and so we're going to get mad and whatever. Something said nice of us, something nice about us, and so we're going to be happy for a day. That can all get a little bit much. The problem is that right now, where this place is, where we are as a city, this stuff actually matters.
Yeah.
It's not just... Like, it's not just Philadelphians or whatever, Washington, D.C. people mad that people are insulting or whatever.
Right.
It's a city that is literally coping with people moving out of town because of perception, people not moving, being hard to recruit because of perception.
Yeah.
Like, the perception, this is not...
We still don't have a lease.
It's not even like, once upon a time we did this with T.J. Simers. Like, he was the sort of, he was the print version of Stephen A., and he was just in L.A., but he was the L.A. columnist, and he wrote a whole column about what a crappy Memphis is, right? What a hellhole Memphis is, and we wrote back and whatever else. But none of it mattered. It didn't matter. We're now, I hate to say this, in terms of perception nationally and how people feel about them, I actually think it kind of matters. It kind of matters that it'll, you know, and so, so I feel a little bit, although it is ridiculous, I do think it matters. And I also think this was suggested to me by my friend Scott Morris, who asked me is it possible? Again, all of this is just in the realm of perception, and perception doesn't matter as much as reality. Like, what matters is poverty. What matters is gun violence. What matters is, is a criminal justice system that is operable and fair and swift and all those things. Those things matter much more than perception, right? But perception also, sadly, now matters, and it tracks loosely reality sometimes, but perception matters. And so
Scott, it's oftentimes exaggerated, but it's not wrong. I think that's kind of how I feel about it.
Well, did it matter when did the whole grit grind thing? And it is funny. Like, you walk through the airport. I was walking through the airport the other day, and there's
on the nice bouncy on the nice sidewalks,
and you're just I feel like delightful. Michael Jackson. Yeah, you know? It's delightful. It's floating.
This is what it feels like. I could have played quarterback.
This is what I want, like putting on Hoka shoes to feel like.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, but anyway, so and there's Grind City Coffee or Brewing or whatever it is, right? It is kind of that didn't used to, like, we weren't, when I moved here, we weren't Grind City. That all that came about because of the Grizzlies. And honestly, because of Tony Allen. And so for a brief shining moment.
We also weren't big on the area code.
The 901 thing. Yeah. I think that became a national thing. But anyway, so we did that matter?
Bluff City was more of like what we were.
Yeah, a little bit before that.
Yeah.
But did that translate at all? The way that Memphis felt about itself in those 10 years, right? Did that translate into anything actually happening better in Memphis? Or did it, in other words, were people more apt to move here and less apt to move away and companies more? Like, does reputation and branding and how you feel about yourself, does it have any real impact on the community? Or is it just a purely psychic impact on the community? Psychological impact.
I would need somebody that has the real statistics. That's kind of the point in time in life where I'm in and out. Like, I'm right. More visiting here than living here. It felt to me like there was significantly more development. It felt like buildings were starting to get nicer. There was more stuff to do downtown.
If people believe in the future of a place, right. Believe in a place, it does seem to me they're more likely to move here. They're more likely to stay here. They're more likely to invest here. All
spend
of that.
Money.
And spend money. All of that, yes, all of that. They're more likely to come to college here. They're more. Yep. It seems to me. So I don't think this stuff is meaningless. And so we're going to roll out the red carpet. We're going to keep. You know, we're going to roll out the red carpet for him. And Duckmaster. I'll be honest. I don't think Stephen A. has enough of a sense of humor about himself. My own personal guess to be a Duckmaster. I think that I'm not going to be a duck master.
Yeah, but it comes with a cane.
He didn't want a cane.
Maybe
if it was a lightsaber.
That's true.
Yeah, I don't think he wants a cane. He is not going to put on a red jacket and herd ducks. He's just not.
But he'll do some of the theatrical costume stuff. Whenever he's trolling. Now, it's like when he's trolling the Cowboys, he lives the gimmick. Like, he'll put the cowboy hat on. He'll do it all.
Anyway, that's happening. In terms of the game last night, I was stunned, and it really does. Like, I mean, in terms of on the court, it broke down to two things. One is the Thunder couldn't shoot; they were 8 of 30 from three. And then,
by the way, that was a marked improvement from the first half.
That is true. And instead of the Thunder turning over the Pacers
with
and
the
turning
other
that into points, it went the other way. I mean, literally, Oklahoma City had 21 turnovers of their own and through three quarters. And let's be clear, after three quarters, it was 90-60. They had only turned the ball over, the Pacers had, seven times, leading to 9 points. And so,
and both teams waved the white flag,
and it was over. And at that point, it was over. So nothing else mattered. And so that's why. But the thing that's so surprising to me, and it just comes back to what I suppose some have been saying all along, is youth, right? And then the offense is the way Peter described it to me in a text is stinky, like without Halliburton, like it's Halliburton and forcing turnovers.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. So
otherwise, it can grind to a halt.
The thing I was thinking about last night, because we've talked about this, the whole psychological, like, of how much, like, human nature plays right into this. And the question I was trying to figure out.
But I thought human nature would have led to, you got an injured Halliburton, like, it felt
a laydown? Like, the laydown? Like, that's, like, I don't know. I just keep thinking of, It feels like we do this more in basketball than it happens in other sports, but I don't know if that's right. Like, I'm just.
Do you put any stock in the. They were offended because they saw the trophy presentation rehearsal on their court?
Not really. I think it's also. This is true. The Thunder have not been a very good road team. They've had a couple of big road wins, but in general, their worst performances have been on the road.
They have never been in this position before.
Correct.
You very clearly will pick the Thunder to win.
Yeah,
Sunday, right?
Well, because you asked me.
But if it were Indiana, would you pick?
I don't know, because that's the other thing. It's this weird thing.
Game 7. You don't know how people are going to react.
Sometimes, like, when you get the home crowd and it's tight, they get, like, very nervous. And you don't really feed off of that. But after they lost game 1, you said, what did I think? And I was like, this just reminds me of the Denver series.
Could turn out completely. Denver. The Denver series. All right. We'll talk more about it with my son, Peter Hawkins. What do we call him?
He is the analytics department, the chief analytics director.
We'll talk to him. Then we got Harrington, and then we got more. Before any of that, I will remind you, it is the summer of 1,000 engagements, and now it's summer. It's here. It is the summer of 1,000 engagements when you can walk through this heat to any of the 5 convenient locations and instantly be glad you did, because kind of amazing, they're giving away diamonds. That's right. They are giving away thousands of carats of diamonds. Spend $9.99 or more and you get free diamond jewelry. Just for an example, you buy a 1.2 carat total double halo diamond engagement ring. It's only $14.99, and you get a free diamond tennis base bracelet. That's right. A free diamond tennis. Free diamonds. Free diamonds, ladies and gentlemen. And so head on in. You'll see. Head on into Robert Irwin Jewelers and you'll see what I mean. Also, save up to 40% on engagement rings, anniversary bands, wedding sets at the Summer of 1,000 Engagements. Plus, of course, the meant to be guarantee. That's all year long. You have a beautiful custom made engagement ring. You've got 365 days to return it. It's Robert Irwin Jewelers, 5 locations. Shop online at rijewelers.com. Back in a moment. Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Back on the Jeff Calkins Show, joined now by the analytics department, the Jeff Calkins Show. We haven't talked to him for a while. Peter Hawkins, he is my son. Well, first of all, Peter, what did you make of the Desmond Bane deal?
I thought it was a curious decision, but ultimately the value seems to be kind of about right for a player of his caliber, and so I think you just have to kind of wait and see what they do next, right? Like, you kind of open up a lot of flexibility here. So, you know, is the next move a teardown? Do you, you know, push your chips in for someone else? I'm not quite so sure.
Who would you want to push their chips in for? How do you want them to spend this money?
That will surely never happen, but that, you know, if you were dreaming big, would obviously be, you know, Giannis or Durant, one of those guys. That's kind of the sweepstakes. That's realistically probably not going to happen. That sure would be fun. And then below that, I think you're starting to look at, if you want someone who is good enough to keep you in contention, you're looking at the Boston guys. So you've potentially Jaylen Brown, who doesn't really excite me just because of how much money he makes. And then you have Derek White, too, who is a great player, who's actually on a, I think for a player of his caliber, is on a pretty affordable deal, right? He only makes like $32 million. So that's someone I'd be interested in if he's available. We don't really know. But if you could get Derek White, you would still have room for like another like $10, $12 million player. So then you could also go after, you know, like a Herb Jones or a Denny Avdija, who, you know, I don't know if either of those guys are available either. So that's kind of the thing is you can dream, you can put together a list of all the players you want. For any one player you name, chances are they're not going to be available. The deal won't work out. So I think you kind of just have to hope that, you know, by some kind of, you know, so, some good fortune, someone exciting kind of works out. But I think it might end up being that you leave the off season kind of doing nothing in particular, and it ends up feeling, you know, kind of.
Well, you could end up with KCP and you know, pick one of the Dallas guys. Do you like?
Yeah, well, that's quite disappointing. You know,
that would be disappointing.
What I'm saying. Well, it's not. I'm not saying that's, you know, malpractice or anything, but that sucks. Like, Desmond Bane is awesome, and switching out Desmond Bane for, you know, PJ Washington and KCP, that does not get you any closer to, you know, hosting a playoff series. Let alone winning a playoff series.
But they have two they'll have two. If, let's say they do that, presumably that would take one first to get P.J. Washington or Daniel Gafford or whatever else, right? But maybe not. But let's say P.J. Washington. So you get one of your firsts, and you still have two firsts to spend otherwise. I mean, that's the idea.
I don't think there's a team that's ever been in this position where they're, you know, trying to go up a level, and they're like, let's do a deconsolidation trade. Let's trade a guy who's, you know, a borderline all-star for a bunch of role players. I don't think that move, typically you go the other way, right? You'd be bundling, you know, Brandon Clark and Santi Aldama and stuff for a Desmond Bane type player. You wouldn't be doing, let's get rid of Desmond Bane to bring in a bunch of guys.
You'd be doing what Orlando did. Is that what you're saying? Which
that's
is
if you wanted to win, that's what you'd be doing. I don't think. Yeah. So
of course they want to win.
Well, I'm not so sure. This certainly doesn't. You know, right now they're no closer to winning, and that's why, to some extent, you have to wait and see. But it might end up being, if there's no exciting trade, this might be kind of the first move in the teardown. At least assuming they're not just looking to kind of, you know, get a bunch of innings eaters and try to, you know, you kind of insulate yourself.
It is interesting. You are and have been from the beginning less pumped about this because the reaction was four firsts. Holy smokes. And you were more tepid about the four firsts as some crazy overpay than most of the universe out there.
Yeah. I mean, the way I always put it is like Desmond Bane's like 27. He makes like $40 million or he's 26. He makes like $40 million, right? Is there a player out there who's, you know, under 27 and makes less than $45 million who's available for only four first-round picks who's as good as Desmond Bane? And the answer is no. There's no such player exists. You can't get a similarly good, young, and, you know, as crazy as it is because he makes $40 million, like, in a world where guys are making, you know, $50, $60 million, like, it's kind of affordable. That player doesn't exist. So there's no kind of clear way to upgrade your roster after making this move. And so if it's the first move in the teardown, then okay, you say, well, at least you got good value for him, whatever. But if the theory is you want to keep winning, chances are you're not going to get a replacement.
Presumably, you could get an ascending. You might be able to identify, I don't know who this is, by the way, an ascending player on a cheaper contract, not who won't be as good as Desmond Bane, but is on a cheaper contract. You might be able to, you might use one or two of these picks and hit on them. You know, I mean, Jalen Williams was picked at 12, right? Like you, and if you had reached your ceiling with these three, here you're giving yourself some swings to maybe, it may be the start of a teardown, but it also could be, we're giving an opportunity to get better, and we weren't going to. We had no opportunities to get better if we just kept these three, because all we had literally was the room exception.
Yeah, I think that's true, but I think that if what you're using this kind of all this flexibility, you know, tradable salaries and first-round picks is to get mediocre role players, that's not
that
making you better.
Right.
If the theory is we're going to, you know, get a guy who's still on a rookie contract who we think is really good and we're going to, you know, offer a bunch of picks for a young player, right? Like, you know, people say Brandon Miller. I don't think that's realistic, but whatever. Someone like that, just offer a bunch of picks for a young guy or...
Okay, but let me ask this.
Aren't, we're going to be aggressive trading up, something like that.
Aren't Neesmith, Nemhard, and Toppin all mediocre role players, and aren't they all central around the two stars that the Pacers have to be getting to Game 7?
I think Nemhard in particular is a little better, and I think that's true, but I also think that, like, I don't think anyone, like, what's the other team besides Indiana who's, like, kind of like this, who, you know, I think it's a good comparison because Tyrese Halliburton and Pascal Siakam, you think, are probably about as good as John Jaren, at least.
They got Miles Turner, too, though. Like, you know, they have Miles Turner, too, but he hasn't actually done much.
But I think that, so I think that's kind of an interesting comparison, but I also think that's relatively unprecedented. Like, we see teams, like, part of the crazy thing about this Indiana run is they, you know, they beat multiple teams that were more talented than them. And I think if the recipe is we're just going to beat teams that are more talented than us by winning improbable games when we're down 12, with 2 minutes to go, like that, then it almost doesn't even matter what how you manage your assets. But I think the goal is kind of to put a team together that you feel is among, you know, has the talent level to go blow for blow for some of these other teams. And you can always get hot, but I don't think that that's, and I think particularly in the more modern kind of second apron era, I think there is more room to kind of just go on a run. But I don't think that's like what you want your strategy to be. And there's no reason you couldn't have just done that with Desmond Bane.
What did you make of last night's game?
It's interesting. OKC is very much like their half court offense, I think, can get like really stuck in the mud. And so when they're not, you know, forcing turnovers, I think they're liable to have these games where they just show up and lay an egg. And I think that's exactly what happened. I mean, you know, they didn't force a lot of turnovers, so they're not getting those easy transition points. And then in the half court, like, SGA had 8 turnovers. And, like, that's the game. Is they didn't get out in transition, and then their half court offense stunk because SGA had 8 turnovers. I think some of that, you know, whatever. I know Indiana did some different stuff. Nembhard didn't have as much ball pressure. I know they switched a little bit more, but I think mostly, more than anything, this is just kind of human nature. Like, it's game 6 at home. If you're OKC, you're like, you know, Halliburton's got a, you know, his calf is dinged up and whatever. Like, you feel like you're the much better team. You're maybe not taking the game as, you know, you just go in expecting the win. And then, you know, you have the home crowd. Indiana's a little more desperate, and you just get rocked. And I think that sometimes that's just how these things go, and there's kind of not much more to say other than that.
All right, let's go to some of the Duke guys. You are now our Duke draft analyst, and we'll start with Milwaukee, who is the massive big. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm not really a fan. To be honest, it's hard to be totally unbiased because he was truly awful in that game we blew against Houston. So that's to be honest, emotionally, the core of why I'm not a fan of his game.
He was terrible.
That's why I think he's terrible. Because
didn't get a rebound.
He was abysmal.
Right.
And he ended our season, basically. But I think beyond that, my main issue is I don't think he's nearly the kind of defensive, like, you see this guy and you're like, he's 7'1" and he's athletic. He's going to be this great defensive player. And I think if you compare him to, you know, Lively, who came out of Duke a few years ago, I don't think he's nearly as mobile. I don't think he's nearly as good targeting the ball. I don't think his instincts are nearly as good. And so that doesn't mean he's going to be a bad defensive player. But just being big, I don't think warrants being drafted like 6th or 7th overall. I think he's certainly a first-rounder, but I think he's more of like a middle-of-the-first guy. Because that's really
compared to Lively and Mark Williams, for example.
Yeah, so Mark Williams, I think, was just a lot kind of even bigger and more physical and just ate up space as just this monstrous lob threat, monstrous offensive rebounder, swatted everything just by being the biggest, longest, most athletic guy on the court. And while Malawach has some of that, it's not to the same degree. It's like 90% of it. I think compared to Lively, I think, you know, Lively does have a lack of physicality to his game, particularly offensively. But I also think Lively had a lot more mobility and a lot more feel on both sides of the ball that I think kind of made you think, okay, could he be a bit of a passing hub on offense defensively? Could he be someone who switches out? Can he, you know, execute multiple different pick and roll coverages, kind of playing up at the level, you know, or dropping or hedging or doing all these different things? And I don't think that Malawach is that kind of versatility, really on either side of the ball. I think he's very much just a Clint Capella style player, and I think that not only does that mean there's limited upside, but I also think there's an issue with these guys where you can only really have one of those guys on your team. And, like, they don't, you know, you can't go double big with, like, 2 Clint Capellas. That wouldn't make any sense at all. So I think there's some kind of roster building fit issues with that kind of player too that I think kind of further devalues it for me as well.
How good is Cooper Flagg going to be?
I have no idea. I mean, the thing that makes him such an unbelievable prospect is I've never felt so confident that someone would be a good NBA player in my entire life. Like, he just does everything at such a high level. But there's just no way this guy cannot play. He can play defense, he can pass, he can dribble, he can shoot, he can play the three, he can play the four. You know, he's pretty good protecting the rim for a guy of his size. Like, he literally does every single thing on the court that you could ask of a player. But at the same time, he doesn't have a ton of, like, super A-plus skills. And I think it's very hard to be a star if you don't have things that you do unbelievably well. And so I could see him, there's a world where he's just kind of makes, you know, 8 All-Stars, 6 All-Stars or something, never, you know, 2 All-NBAs, and is like a really good kind of Paul George type player, which I realize is an awesome player, but not quite the kind of, you know, transcendent player that he's being billed as. But I could also see a world where he's even better. I mean, the things that really excite me is, even though he was very skinny at Duke, he was only 18 years old, he was like 200 pounds for a guy of his height, the way he plays is very physical. He gets to the line a lot, and as he grows into his body, I think some of that kind of bully ball aspect of his game, I think, will be a way for him to kind of add a lot of value and scoring punch. In terms of
level, is he Cade Cunningham?
As a prospect,
yeah.
I think he's better as a prospect. I mean, it's interesting because Cade obviously had this massive leap this year. He was great in the playoffs against New York. So it's to say he's better than Cade when Cade is clearly going to be a many, many time All-Star, I think sounds crazy. But I think as a prospect, he's very clearly better. Like, it's not even close. I mean, Cade in college, he had a few issues. One is he just couldn't shoot twos. He couldn't get to the rim. He had no downhill ability. He turned the ball over a ton. And he's like kind of a so-so defensive player. I mean, defensively, Cooper Flagg is a much better player. Yeah. He's probably not on his level as a shooter, at least not in terms of just like a prospect. But I think he's much more physical. He's much more athletic. I mean, he's very bouncy. I don't know if he's really that like fast or explosive, like getting downhill, but he's very bouncy. So when he does get in the paint, he can elevate, you know, on both sides of the floor to either block shots or get off kind of tough shots too.
All right. How about Knipple?
Oh, big Knipple guy. It's interesting. He's been kind of cast as this movement shooter. I mean, he's kind of a white guy. He's not that athletic. He's got short arms, and he's a great shooter. So it's like, oh, he's going to be, you know, J.J. Redick or, you know, Luke Kennard or something. But I think he's got a lot more of a dynamic game offensively. I mean, when Cooper Flagg was, you know, got injured in the ACC tournament and Knipple had to kind of take the reins as the lead offensive player, like, they won the tournament. Like, he was awesome. He's clearly a guy who his downhill game, he's very good on drives, even though he's not fast, he's not explosive. He's great using his body. He has unbelievable touch. His handle is very good for a player with his shooting ability. And because he's such a good shooter, like, you can't give him an inch of daylight in any spot in the court. So you have to play up on him, and then he just uses his body kind of, you know, almost Luka Doncic-esque, just kind of, you know, grinds away at you until he's at the rim and then just throws something off the top of the glass, and it goes in like all the time. He's got unbelievable touch.
Will he be the second or third best player on a really good NBA team?
I'm not sure. I do think some of the athletic limitations are real. I think he could be the third best player. I think second is a little bit of a stretch. I would be surprised if he ended up being that good, but I think the kind of upper range, he certainly could be the third best player. I mean, kind of similar to a Desmond Bain. I think that's totally in play for him.
And then we got, there's Proctor's coming out too, right? The combo guard?
Yeah, I like Proctor a lot as well. I mean, he's very, very skinny, which is kind of interesting. Like, he's just got a weird body type in that sense. And then also just, he's not really clear. Like, he is kind of a combo guard in almost a not great way. Like, you kind of, if someone's a combo guard, you usually want them to be like, you know, a really great shooter or something like that. And he's more of just kind of a point guard who, you know, he likes to play on the ball. He likes to play in pick and roll, but he's just not quite good enough or skilled enough to be a point guard, at least not in, you know, full time. So that's a concern. At the same time, he is just a really good pick and roll player. And I think he's going to be, like, I think he'll has a good chance to be a useful NBA player, maybe more of a backup kind of six man. But at the same time, he honestly reminds me a little bit of Nembhard, who obviously people kind of talked about him as like, oh, he could be a decent backup. And, you know, he ended up being absolutely great. So, you know, we'll wait and see. But I am a fan of his game as well.
And then finally, as a Duke graduate, you had to cope with not winning the title, crushing loss, upset loss. How does that compare to a Bills loss, to a crushing Bills loss to the Kansas City Chiefs?
Oh, Bills loss is worse. It's not even close. Because Duke, I know 10 years from now, they'll still be in the mix. Like, they have a million shots. They, whatever. Like, the Bills, yes, 2 years from now, they'll probably be in the mix. But as soon as this era of Bills football is over, they may never, ever get back there again. Like my view is, as soon as Josh Allen retires, the Bills are, like, never going to have another winning season. Like, that's kind of my expectation, as ridiculous as that is. And so every year is insanely precious. And so
it is funny because people talk about Stephen A. saying no one wants to come to Memphis. But the truth of the matter is, for the longest time, and it's still true, nobody wanted to go to Buffalo. Who the hell wants to go to Buffalo? With all due respect, and I love Buffalo. You want to go to a place because they get Josh Allen, and then they have this culture that becomes, you know, it seems like a pretty cool place to play and great teammates and whatever else. And so that does trump, but it's a lot harder to build that there or in Memphis than it is other places, right? Or at Duke than it is at Duke, for example.
Yeah, I think that's true. But I also think it's not just that. I mean, there's two things. One, you draft a guy like Josh Allen, and then, yeah, other guys want to come to play with Josh Allen. But even if they don't, you still have Josh Allen. Like, it almost doesn't matter. Like, who needs the other guys? You have Josh Allen. Like, it just drafting the superstar is so easily the most important thing in, you know, basketball and football, that kind of everything else is secondary, and that's something that you can do in Memphis or you can do in Buffalo or Baltimore or anywhere.
Is Ja Morant the superstar?
Well, we thought so, didn't we? No, I think he certainly has the talent. I think it's, and I honestly think it's more, people talk about the antics. I think it's more about the health. Like, it's not just that you get injured and you miss time and, like, you know, he got injured in the playoffs and they probably were going to win that game. And then he gets hurt and then.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.